Hello and welcome to another episode of the Likes of Us podcast with me, your host Neil Bradley, dedicated to working class life, art, politics and culture. Okay, so I'm back in deepest, darkest Bermondsey again on a cold and frosty night tonight for Mill's match against Tabletoppers Bournemouth, a place that I hope one day to retire to. Bournemouth I'm talking about, not deepest, darkest Bermondsey. So apologies for not posting an episode of the podcast in the last couple of weeks. I've been recording little bits and pieces, which you're going to hear after this little introduction, but I've just not had the motivation, so to speak, to put it all together, because it takes a little bit of time to put it together, these episodes, as you can obviously tell by the high production values I place on this podcast. And I think it's been a weird old couple of weeks in terms of things to talk about on the podcast. Now, first up, I went to the David Bowie exhibition at Heddon Street. It's like a new pop-up shop exhibition. It's 75, and it was counting down 75 days until David Bowie's birthday in January. So that was really interesting. You'll hear about that. There's also Remembrance Sunday, and I went to the local parade and service up in Eltham High Street, which was always really sad but uplifting at the same time. I went back to work, stone me, went back to work, face-to-face teaching, even though nobody turned up. Had a full timetable planned and nobody turned up. What are the chances of that happening? I think it's going to take a bit of time before people start drifting back, because I think we've lost a lot of people because of the pandemic. And my timing was pretty awful, because I'd announced a return to face-to-face teaching. We'd published a timetable, and then the UCU union in work called a strike, and they called a long one, 21 days worth of strike action, which seems somewhat ill-advised and futile to me. You've heard my views on the matter in previous podcasts, and I think their approach is misguided, even though the aims of their action I certainly support, because nobody wants to see job losses, certainly not me, certainly my own job. So it was a weird old turn of events, going back to work and sitting in an empty room. So I did some face-to-face teaching with myself, which was riveting. I also had this weird period where my research assistant went off to sunnier climes, even though she keeps reminding me that she spent most of the time sitting in a truck at the back of the desert. So she went off to Dubai to film some dodgy golf tournament or something or other. And as you know, I don't cope very well when I'm on my own. So I think it was a combination of things that has made this podcast so late in its delivery. I'm still not quite sure when you're going to get it, even as I'm speaking to you now. So another night of misery, no doubt, down at the Den. I'm not holding my breath and I'm not keeping my hopes up, but I'll give you more if there's anything exciting happens in a little while. And then, if I don't speak to you again, coming up is the podcast or series of podcasts that you should have got a couple of weeks ago. Cheers.
All right, come here, you two. Come on. What's going on?
As you see, he started it.
He's been chucking go.
Ah, shut up. It's always the same tale, isn't it? Somebody else's fault, nobody's to blame. Look at the mess you're in. Look at the state you've made. Don't look so sorry for yourself, Casper. You're not dead yet.
I will be when I've heard him.
Oh, yes. You'd be glad, aren't you? Just about your size, Casper, isn't he? Eh? Why don't you pick on somebody your own size? What if I rubbed your nose in the coke, eh? What would you say about that? You'd say I was a bully, wouldn't you? And you'd be right. Because I'm bigger and I'm stronger than you, aren't I? Eh?
I'll fetch my dad.
Oh, yes, you'll fetch your dad and I'll fetch mine. My dad's heavyweight champion of the world, my dad is. So what will your dad do then, eh? That's what it's like to be bullied. You don't like it, do you? You like it a bit less if I ever catch you at it again. Do you understand, MacDonald? Do you understand it?
Sir.
Get it shoveled up. Come here a minute. You've been smoking?
No, sir.
Yeah, haven't you? I can smell it on your breath.
No,
see me afterwards. Get it done. Go on.
What's it all about?
He's calling me names, sir, saying things about me dad and me mum and our Jude and everything all happened.
All right. Calm down. They seem to pick on you, don't they, Casper? Why is it?
Don't know, sir.
Because you're a bad one.
Maybe I am sometimes, but I'm not that bad, sir. I know stacks of other kids are swearing at me, but they seem to get away with it.
Why else do you think? There must be some reason, isn't there?
Well, take this morning, sir. I just came in, sir, and just dozed off. I wasn't doing that wrong, sir. You see, I'd been up since six. I had to duck papers. Then I had to rush home to have a look at Bird, then run to school. I mean, to say, you'd be tired, wouldn't you, sir?
Be exhausted.
And that's not... You shouldn't be caring for that, should you, sir? You can't tell Mr. Grass that. And this little lad, sir, he'd only brought a letter, sir, from one of the teachers, and he got cane. It's not to laugh at, sir. Afterwards, you're sick as a dog.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Likes of Us podcast with me, your host Neil Bradley, dedicated to working class life, art, politics and culture. So I'm in Carnaby Street as we speak, trying to avoid the rain, and I've just been to Bowie 75 in Heddon Street, which is like a special shop, pop-up shop, exhibition, counting down 75 days to what would have been David Bowie's 75th birthday. And I urge you to get there. From what I understand, Angelina Jolie was there yesterday with her four brats, so I'm pleased that we avoided her today. But yeah, it's sort of like a shop plus an exhibition. And if you go downstairs, you can hear 360 degrees of Bowie. So you sit in this dark room, you sit in the middle of the room, and they're playing two David Bowie albums, Space Oddity and Reality, which is one of those sort of ones that slips under the radar in his later catalogue. And you hear it as it was meant to be heard. So there's like multiple speakers and you can hear all of the different instruments coming in from all different angles, including the stylophone, which sadly was advertised by Rolf Harris, but of course which David Bowie employed on Space Oddity. And they've actually brought out a limited edition stylophone, a Bowie one with the Bowie insignia on it. But I'm a sucker, but not that much of a sucker. I've still got my Rolf Harris one, so I'll leave it at that. And my didgeridoo. And my wobble board. So I would urge you to get there. There's still quite a few days to go before David Bowie's 75th birthday celebrations, commemorations, call it what you will. You can actually leave a virtual message for David, which you type in and it goes up into the ether. And he gives you a wave back when you send a message. So I sent him one from Brad and thanked him for getting me through all those years of agony when I was young and when I was old and beyond. So I'm just going to go to my church now. I've already been to one part of the church. I'm going to the Annex now in Carnaby Street. And of course I'm talking about Levi's. I bought myself a nice little natty jacket and I'm hoping to spend more. So I'll give you more in a very little while. Cheers.
Suddenly, Bowie is back, but it's Bowie like never before.
She was the young American, all the way from Washington. Her breath when her legs off the bottom flowing. Live for just these 20 years. Do we have to die for the 50 more?
David Bowie, happening now on his new album, Young American, on RCA Records and Tapes.
Okay, it's becoming a bit of a habit now, but I'm back once again in deepest, darkest Bermondsey, and darkest is a good description because it's pitch black tonight, freezing cold, winter has definitely arrived, so I've got the thermals on, I've got to take care of myself in my old age, because I've never been too strong, I've always been a bit weak, and I've always liked wearing seven layers, so just walking to the ground now. The opposition tonight, Reading Football Club. Now, I remember back in the late 70s, early 80s maybe, a match that Mill played at Reading. And prior to the match, in the streets outside, there was like a protest by the Reading supporters. And they'd made one of those, you know, those cardboard coffins which they was carrying to the ground with someone leading it dressed as an undertaker, you know. We've never really gone in for that sort of stuff down Millwall. As I've always said, we always go straight for the riot. Cut out the middle, man. But on that particular day, they were protesting at a proposed merger between themselves, Reading, and their local rivals, Oxford Town. And the plans were drawn up by none other than Robert Maxwell, who is a resident of Oxford, who lived in the biggest council house in Britain, and he paid a peppercorn rent for it. And as far as I'm aware, the family still live there now. And he planned to change the name of the two football clubs, merge them together and call them the Thames Valley Royals, which never quite got off the ground, but it was something that would happen later on in terms of Wimbledon, when they become MK Dons, or Milton Keynes Dons, and the other side, the old like Wimbledon Football Club, they relaunch themselves as AFC Wimbledon, and now they're both playing in the same division, I think. So, I mean, it happens in America all the time in terms of like baseball clubs and American football clubs and basketball clubs, because out there, of course, they call them franchises, which I suppose is what they are now here, especially in terms of like the Premier League. And they just switch towns and cities and states willy-nilly, you know. So, you know, the team that we go to see, the San Francisco Giants, were originally the New York Giants. So it proves that it happens. So I'm nearly at the ground now. Could do about this on a Tuesday night, I've got to tell you. But that's what happens when you get burdened by your parents with a football club that are no good. So 50 plus years now, I've been coming to the house of misery. And at the moment, it's really miserable. But I suppose I'll never stop. At least that's what the football club rely on, that fact. So whilst all of those 400 luxury jets are flying into Scotland, and all those luxury yachts and all of those limousines are clocking up all the roads in and around Glasgow, there's about 8,000 people blogging up a dirty street in Bermondsey for Mill versus Reading. You pay your money and you take your choice, I suppose. I mean, we're obviously doing more for the environment because of the fact that the stadium is located next to the South London recycling refinery. So, as they say, carry on screaming, frying tonight. Anyway, I'm not expecting too much excitement tonight, so I'll give you more in a little while, or tomorrow, no doubt, when I'm walking little Travis Bickle. So, more in a while-ish. Cheers.
It wasn't until after Saturday's home match at Elm Park that club workers and players heard of the proposed merger between the two clubs. Even so, they had to wait until Sunday's newspapers before any details emerged, and then they weren't official. Today, the players turned up for training as normal, still completely in the dark. The club's manager, Maurice Evans, spent the morning fending off press inquiries, saying he couldn't comment on something he knew nothing about. Why had they all been kept in the dark?
I've no idea. No idea whatsoever. This is something that is apparently above my head. All we want to do is go there and play football and hopefully all be in a job next season at Reading.
Do you not think that a merger would work then?
I think that's possibly a thing of the future, but I'm quite certain the two sets of supporters would be bitterly against it. Something like that has to happen in football, I accept that. But obviously, both I, who've been involved with Reading Football Club now for 25 years, and certainly the supporters who have supported us all through the years, I'm quite certain would much rather keep the identity of Reading Football Club. And Oxford is exactly the same. But as everyone knows, there are terrible financial problems in football, and something, some radical change has to be made.
By any standards, even in the turbulent world of football, it's been quite a season for Reading. Struggling for survival in the third division, they faced a complete season with a for sale notice over their heads. The chairman, Frank Waller, who's a local businessman, said if the right offer came in, he and his board would let it go. Rock star Ian Gillan said he was interested. So did a former player, Roger Smee. He's now a millionaire property dealer and a financier in Reading, but nothing came of any of the bids. At Reading Football Club's headquarters in Elm Road, there was outrage this morning at the merger proposals, not least among the supporters.
Complete and utter amazement. Amazement because there'd been no inkling at all anywhere in the town that this was being envisaged. And that to think that Reading and Oxford are going to merge to become, I think the name is Thames Valley Royals, leaves me with absolute horror, because people come to Reading to watch Reading FC play football, and I'm sure that Oxford United supporters go to Oxford to watch Oxford play football. And this question of having a new stadium somewhere between Reading and Oxford, I cannot see any fans travelling to either, from either town, to watch these games.
Reading's evening newspaper has tonight launched a Save Reading Football Club appeal, and the Borough Council say they want football kept in the town. The answer may lie in an office in Reading's town centre, within sight of the Elm Park lights, and the office which is occupied by Roger Smee.
I would like to see a new board of directors at the club. Considering the assets that the club has, I would like to see an involvement with the Borough Council, who I hope over the next 48 hours will move a resolution to join in with a consortium to acquire the club. I would like to see them, the club and the council, acting in concert to perhaps redevelop a new stadium to the benefit of the people of Reading as well as the football of Reading.
What's wrong exactly with the present board?
For me, the football club belongs to the town. I have implored the chairman via the telephone last evening to allow me the time to sit and explain my proposals to him in detail. Now, with the public outcry and the council also showing great interest, I hope to persuade him that there is another way of keeping Reading Football Club on the league map, and that at any cost, this merger must not go ahead.
There are six directors of Reading Football Club, three of whom were not consulted about the merger plans. The other three, who include the chairman, are big shareholders, but don't quite hold a controlling interest. So there's now a boardroom battle, as well as the uproar in the town. The next week is crucial to the club's future. Certainly, the result of the match on May the 2nd may be quite academic.
Okay, I'm back in deep with Starkis Bermondsey. Again, it looks like the heavens are going to open up. It's the greyest day you can ever imagine. Today, Saturday, in Coldblow Lane for the visit of Derby County, managed by the pubic hair transplant, Wayne Rooney. What joy awaits us today. Again, I'm not holding my breath. So, a weird old week, especially in terms of this like preparation ahead of us returning to like face-to-face teaching. Timetable all in place. The date set, 15th of November, for returning to face-to-face teaching. And then the UCU union, which is like the university college union, which represents all the lecturers, have voted to go on strike over job cuts and pension contributions. So it's all up in the air again because of the fact, I certainly wouldn't cross a picket line, and they've announced 21 days of strike action. So we're going to have to see where that takes us, and it will probably mean that this long-awaited return to face-to-face teaching will have to wait a little while longer. So in fact, that's when it's going to start now, and which is a shame really, because we've been making sort of real plans and progress in terms of the timetable. Lots of new classes that we was going to deliver, lots of new classes that I was going to deliver, which I was looking forward to. I've done a lot of preparation in advance, and I'm not going to say I've done a lot of research because I haven't, but pretty much ready to go. Very much a case of build it and they will come. And now it seems like they won't be coming, or I won't be there. So there you go. So I've just turned into Ilderton Road now. Plenty of people walking in the direction of Millwall as we speak. I was going to go and buy myself a nice chocolate bar, but there's too many people queuing up a lager. So I'll have to wait until I get down the den and see what delights await me down there. I'm sure it'll be great. I'm sure it'll be a full buffet down there. So as I say, not too much to report. A weird old week. Still got my dad, who's not too well. Still not sort of left the house. But again, I've been spending plenty of time in his company, sitting, talking about the old days. All I've noticed of late, he started telling me stories that about 2 weeks ago I was telling him. So I don't know who it is that's losing the plot, whether it's him or me. Now, we had a nice little gathering in the old micro pub last night, and comical as ever. And it was like the Darby and Joan Club. We was all just sitting there talking about how old we feel and how old we actually are, and when will it all end. It's all going to end in pain, isn't it? And stiff joints. So, I think I'm definitely made for that place. You always get a seat, which is nice. You don't have to stand. Everybody knows your name. The only thing lacking, really, is Meals on Wheels. If they could just deliver a little dinner in a tinfoil tray to me, I'd be, made up. But there you go. So, as I say, I'm not sure if there'll be any action, so to speak, of, but if there is, I'll get back to you. Or if not, I'll probably speak to you tomorrow now on my next walk with Travis Bickle. If I can be asked, it'll be tonight. But you know how this podcast goes. So I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers. Okay, I didn't think I was going to come back to you, but I am. Just walking back to the car now from Millwall. Another 2 hours of misery at the den. Awful. It's the worst football I've ever known in the 50-odd years that I've been going to watch Millwall. And I'm not talking about... I've seen some poor teams in my time, but this manager, he seems intent on boring us all to death. So today was the remembrance game, where we remember those fallen in the First World War and the Second World War. And Mill always do it really well. 2 minute silence was impeccably observed. Immediately that finished, the crowd was up for it. There was a lot of noise, people on their feet, and it quickly deteriorated into another bore fest. Only a real bit of interest, as I said before, the pantomime villain that is Wayne Rooney on the touchline. I don't know. I understand that football's meant to be part of the entertainment industry, but there's no evidence of that in deepest, darkest Bermondsey. So it goes on and on and on and on. So nearly back at the car now. Going to call it a day there. I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers. Okay, you find me on Remembrance Sunday, just in Eltham High Street, waiting for the parade to come along for the remembrance service at the church in Eltham. Now, this is the first time since the start of the pandemic that the parade and the service, like the outside service, has been allowed. So already when I came past where they all meet, there was a really large crowd, which is always good to see. There's normally a really good turnout here in Eltham. Most people remember, which is nice to see, although there's plenty of people don't. What's been nice this year is that the police have taken the complaints seriously from the previous years, and they've closed all of the roads, diverted all of the buses, and they've stopped the traffic completely, which is good, because in the past the parade has competed with people that don't care, who don't remember, bibbing their horns and trying to drive. I've just seen a policeman stopping a fucking Uber Eats, which is nice to see. Hopefully he'll beat him with his truncheon. Oh, shame, he's just turning around and sending him in the opposite direction with a flea in his ear. So, yeah, as I say, always a good turnout for this kind of thing. You can probably hear the march behind me with the pipe and drum band leading the parade. So they're about 40 yards behind me. So I'm just going to walk on and get a nice spot, and I'll give you more in a little while. Cheers.
What passing bells for these who die as cattle? Only the monstrous anger of the guns. Only the stuttering rifles' rapid rattle can patter out their hasty orisons. No mockeries now for them, no prayers, nor bells, nor any voice of mourning save the choirs, the shrill, demented choirs of wailing shells and bugles calling for them from sad shires. What candles may be held to speed them all? Not in the hands of boys, but in their eyes shall shine the holy glimmers of goodbyes. The pallor of girls' brows shall be their pall, their flowers the tenderness of patient minds, and each slow dusk a drawing down of blinds.
Bent double, like old beggars under sacks. Knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge. till on the haunting flares we turned our backs, and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots but limped on, bloodshod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the hoots of disappointed shells that dropped behind. Gas! Gas, quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes and thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams, before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in, and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face, like a devil sick of sin. If you could hear, at every jolt, the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory. The old lie, dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori.
Okay, so another day, another dollar, and I'm in Guildhall, and we're outside the Guildhall Art Gallery in the City of London, and we're going to a Noel Coward exhibition. Now, it's strange, because I think working class people of my age, I think, would probably only recognise Noel Coward from his fleeting appearance in the film The Italian Job, where he plays, if you think about it, the original genial Harry Grout to Michael Caine's Norman Stanley Fletcher. So yeah, we're here to see an exhibition of Noel Coward, who actually, I think, was born in London, wrote a lot of songs and lots of films about London, but he actually ended up living in Kent in this cottage. I mean, they call it a cottage. It was quite a generous-sized cottage, I have to say. And that is now occupied by Julian Clary, who was a big Noel Coward fan. And it just goes to show you how much money you can make from dressing in drag and being a gay comedian and having a wonder dog, doing your acts with a wonder dog. Maybe I should try that with Travis Bickle. Maybe I should dress up as Marilyn Monroe and take Travis Bickle on the road to work in men's clubs. Yeah, so we're just about to go in to this Noel Coward exhibition, and I'll tell you what it's like once I've been in there. Cheers.
London pride has been handed down to us. London pride is a flower that's free. London pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be. Whoa, Liza, see the Custer barrows, the vegetable marrows, and the fruit piled high. Oh, Liza, little London sparrows, Covent Garden Market where the Custers cry. Cockney feet mark the beat of history. Every street pins a memory down. Nothing ever can quite replace the grace of London town. There's a little city flower every spring unfailing, growing in the crevices by some London railing. though it has a Latin name. In town and countryside, we in England call it London Pride. London Pride has been handed down to us. London Pride is a flower that's free. London Pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be. Hey lady, when the day is dawning, see the policeman yawning on his lonely beat. Gay lady, Mayfair in the morning, hear your footsteps echo in the empty street. Early rain and the pavement's glistening, all Park Lane in a shimmering gown. Nothing ever could break or harm the charm of London town. In our city darkened now, street and square and crescent, we can feel our living past in our shadowed present. Ghosts beside our starlit Thames, who lived and loved and died, keep throughout the ages London pride. London pride has been handed down to us. London pride is a flower that's free. London pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be. Grey city, stubbornly implanted, taken so for granted for a thousand years. Stay city, smokily enchanted, cradle of our memories, our hopes and fears. Every blitz your resistance toughening, from the Ritz to the Anchor and Crown. Nothing ever could override the pride of London town.
Okay, I'm rounding this weird edition of the Likes of Us podcast with a walk back from the greengrocers, where I've just had my booster jab, the Moderna, which sounds like an 80s synth group. All my jokes were wasted on the young fella that did it. He was from Eritrea. So, a pint, that's very nearly an armful. He didn't have a clue what I was talking about. And he didn't even get me joke about only feeling a small prick. So, I just let that one go. So you have to go into the greengrocers, get your jab, and then you have to go and sit in the hairdressers 15 minutes. Have a perm and a blue rinse, so killing two birds with one stone. I'm expecting all of the side effects because it's all in my head, or in this case, all in my arm. And a sort of fitting way to end this podcast, as I say, it's been a weird one, this episode, a whole lot of different stuff. Never mind the quality, feel the width, that's what I say. So I'm just walking home now, and then I'm going to go straight to bed, as per the instructions, because I said I'm going to feel tired. I'm not expecting that to last all through winter. So, I'll speak to you all next week. Think of us. Think of the likes of us. Remember the glorious dead. And, once again, get yourself jabbed. Cheers.
Oh, will you never let me be? Oh, will you never set me free? The ties that bound us are still around us. There's no escape that I can see. And still those little things remain that bring me happiness or pain. A cigarette that bears a lipstick's traces, an airline ticket to romantic places, and still my heart has wings. These foolish things remind me of you. a tinkling piano in the next apartment. Those stumbling words that told you what my heart meant. A fairground's painted swings. These foolish things remind me of you. You came, you saw, you conquered me. When you did that to me, I somehow knew that this had to be. The winds of March that make my heart a dancer. A telephone that rings, but who's to answer? Oh, how the ghost of you clings. These foolish things remind me of you. Gardenia perfume lingering on a pillow, while strawberries only 7 francs a kilo. And still my heart has wings. These foolish things remind me of you. The park at evening when the bell has sounded. The Île-de-France with all the girls around it. The beauty that is spring. These foolish things remind me of you. I know that this was bound to be. These things have haunted me, for you've entirely enchanted me. The sigh of midnight trains in empty stations. Silk stockings thrown aside and invitations. Oh, how the ghost of you clings. These foolish things remind me of you. First daffodils and long excited cables, and candlelight on little corner tables. And still my heart has wings. These foolish things remind me of you. The smile of Garbo and the scent of roses. The waiter's whistling as the last bar closes. The song that Crosby sings. These foolish things remind me of you. How strange, how sweet to find you still. These things are dear to me, that seem to bring you so near to me. The scent of smoldering leaves, the wail of steamers, two lovers on the street.